Well, God bless you, saints, and welcome to session 3 of Walking with God. And if you hadn't noticed yet, this is not really a class on the revelation manifestations, although that comes into it. It's about everything involved in walking with God. It means where's your heart at, where's your attitude, where are your expectations. And do you just love God and know that God loves you and have that confidence to trust Him every day? But listening to His still small voice, or however else He chooses to reveal Himself to you, is also part of it. It's very important. So let's get on in session 3 here. We're going to read about another bunch of wonderful men and women. And in addition to the men we've been reading about, there are two women who so believe God that they ended up in the Christ line and are specifically mentioned when you get to the Gospels in the Christ line. Both of them were women who came from non-Hebrew backgrounds. They were not of the bloodline of Israel, yet they so believe God that they went on to do great things and serve God's people and ended up being in the bloodline of the Messiah. So let's start in Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1. And verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, Joshua 1:1, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. And that was a radical thing, because you got to realize they'd been traveling in the wilderness for 40 years, and with rare exceptions like Joshua and Caleb, all the adults that had left Egypt had died during that 40 years. So there were very few people who'd known any other leader besides Joshua, because the people... The children born in the wilderness, very few people that knew anybody besides Moses as their leader. The children had been born in the wilderness, and when they were born, Moses was their leader, and now all of a sudden he's dead. That would be a shock. And we've all been in groups where we knew wonderful leaders that we'd come to rely on, and then when they die, there are those people who think, well, the leader's dead, therefore the organization's dead, therefore I'm not going to believe God anymore. But of course, we know that's not the right thing to do. God and His Word stand forever. People, including leaders of groups, will come and go. And when we have a leader or a teacher that helps us, we obviously want them to be there for a long time, but they're going to die eventually. And so now the book of Joshua deals with how God worked with Joshua and how Joshua walked with God to continue to lead God's people, even though the leader, the only leader most of them had ever known, was now dead. So, again, Joshua 1:1. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. Now, they didn't have any of this land yet, and God said they would get it. And it really wasn't until the days of Solomon that they controlled most of that. I mean, all the way to the Euphrates, that's where Babylon is. I mean, that was a long way, 800 miles away, roughly, like from here to where I'm sitting to Chicago. It's a long way, a lot of land. And the children of Israel, little by little, laid claim to it. But again, it took centuries until the time of David and Solomon until they got to where they controlled most of that land. And then after Solomon, they started to lose it. So, verse 5, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. Now look at this. As I was what? With Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. So here God's giving Joshua instruction about how to lead a few million people. And we talked a little bit about that this earlier this morning, but we'll go in a little more depth tonight. He's talking to this fellow Joshua about how to lead a few million people across a river at flood stage and invade a populated land because God said he's given it to him. But he's not giving him military pointers. Nothing wrong with military strategy, but that's not what God's giving him. He's saying the two things you need to know are, I will be with you, and you got to keep your head in the word. You got to do what my word says. That's how you'll prosper. And that's what walking with God comes down to. You know God's there with you. In our case, we have Christ in us. We have the Spirit of God born within. You know God's there with you, and you keep your head in the word and keep focusing on God and keep focusing on his deliverance in your life. That's what you do. Other stuff you have to do. Whatever field you're in, there are technical things you need to know. There's skills you have to have. Everybody has them. And that's important. But beyond that, you have to know God's with you, and you have to keep your head in the word. That's how you prosper. Let's read that verse again. I'm actually going to go back to verse 5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous. Courageous to do what? Courageous that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night. That's what you meditate on. So when you have a tough day, don't spend your whole time thinking about what a terrible day it was. Focus your mind back on God's word and his deliverance. Verse 8, verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then, when you do that, thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. Why? For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. You've got the best support you could possibly have with God being with you. Awesome stuff. Verse 10, then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host. Command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days you shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. Now, it may seem obvious to you that when God told him that, he would go do it. But we're going to end this session with a record of somebody who didn't, not just somebody, but a whole bunch of people who didn't carry out what God said. And it caused some real problems for them. But Joshua listened, he believed. Let's go to verse 16. And they answered Joshua, saying, all thou commandest us we will do, and whithersoever thou sendest us, we will go. So then the rest of the people listened to Joshua and said, sure. There were times like when they were crossing the wilderness, you know, shortly after they left Egypt, that Moses sent spies in. Moses listened to God, but the rest of the people wouldn't. There are times when the leader doesn't even listen to God, let alone the other people. But here, both the leader, Joshua, and the people he spoke with all obeyed God. So verse 16, they answered Joshua, saying, "All thou commandest us, we will do, and whithersoever thou sendest us, we will go. According as we hearken unto Moses in all things, so will we hearken unto thee. Only the Lord thy God be with thee as he was with Moses." We just want you to have God with you. "Whosoever he be," verse 18, "that doth rebel against thy commandment will not hearken unto thy words and all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. Only be strong and of a good courage." So this generation is doing better than their parents. Their parents' generation is the one that mumbled about, you know, having to cross the Red Sea and not having water and not having food and it being a rough walk. And they're scared of the sons of Anak, the giants, and they didn't want to go in to claim the land. But this younger generation, they are ready to go. Now, there are plenty of other places where the older generation believed God and the younger generation wouldn't. So it's not an age thing. It's a matter of where are the people spiritually. And this particular generation under Joshua did great. Chapter 2. "And Joshua the son of Nun sent out of Shittim two men to spy secretly, saying, 'Go view the land, even Jericho.' And they went and came into an harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho..." Oh, by the way, there's a great debate about Rahab. Was she a harlot or an innkeeper? Those people that study Eastern customs say that women would always stay at home and wear a veil and not deal with the public. But an innkeeper couldn't wear a veil and did deal with the public, so they called her a harlot. I'm not sure if that's true or if it was just Victorian English modesty that made them say that. Because the same people that said that talked about new, you know, wine at times had to be new wine. They couldn't actually drink alcohol because you wouldn't do that. So there's just I don't really know. But whether she was a harlot or an innkeeper, she was a woman that did business with the public and really trusted the true God and ended up in the Christ line. So no matter what her background, where she ended up at the end of it was tremendous. And there are people like Mary Magdalene, who had seven spirits in her, and everybody considered a harlot. And she went on to be a wonderful believer. So I don't really know, but you'll hear all these things. So they went and came into a harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, there came men in hither tonight of the country of Israel to search out the country. And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, 'Bring forth the men that are come to thee, which are entered into thine house, for they be come to search out all the country.' And the woman took the two men and hid them, and said thus, 'There came man unto me, but I don't know where they were, where they came from.' And it came to pass," verse 5, "about the time of the shutting of the gate, when it was dark, that the men went out. Whither the men went, I know not. Pursue after them quickly, for you shall overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof of the house, hid them with stalks of flax, which she had laid in order upon the roof. And the men pursued after them the way to Jordan under the fords. And see, before we had an Accord, now we have a different kind of car. They pursued them under the fords, and as soon as they were pursued after them were gone out, they shut the gate. And before they were laid down, she came up unto them upon the roof. Now look at this. Talk about walking with God. Talk about trusting God. Here's a woman who was raised worshiping false gods, not the God of Israel. But look what she says. She said unto the men, verse 9, "I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom he utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that you will also show kindness unto my father's house and give me a true token, and that you will save alive my father, my mother, my brother, and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death.' And the men answered her, 'Our life for yours, if you utter not this our business. And it shall be, when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee.' Then she let them down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the town wall. and she dwelt upon the wall. And she said unto them, Get you to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you, and hide yourselves there 3 days until the pursuers be returned. And afterward may you go your way. And the men said unto her, We will be blameless of this thine oath, which thou hast made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window, which thou didst lettest down by, this nice red rope, and thou shalt bring thy father, thy mother, thy brethren, and all thy father's household home unto thee. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him. And if thou utter this our business, then we will be quit, will be free of thine oath, which thou hast made us to swear. And she said, According unto your word, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet line in the window. And they went and came unto the mountain, and abode there 3 days, until the pursuers were returned. And the pursuers sought them throughout all the way, but found them not. So the two men returned, descended from the mountains, passed over, came to Joshua the son of Nun, and told him all the things that befell them. And they said unto Joshua, Truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. So Rahab was quite the woman, quite the believer. Let's go on to chapter 2. Let's go to Hebrews 11:31. Hebrews, we'll read about a little bit more about Rahab. Hebrews 11:31. By believing the harlot Rahab. Now, what did she have to believe? She believed that the God of Israel was the true God and was going to give the city over to the Israelites. That's all she had to believe. She had almost no knowledge of Scripture, but she believed what she'd heard. And so by believing, we are in Hebrews 11:31, by believing the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. Now go to Matthew 1. And Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. So Boaz was Rahab's son. Rahab will show up in a few minutes when we get to Ruth. But that is just amazing that a guy named Salmon married Rahab and they had a son named Boaz. So she was in the Christ line. Okay, so then they continued with Joshua, getting back to Joshua chapter 3. Joshua chapter 3. In verse 13, here's the word of the Lord. Back in verse 12. Now therefore take you 12 men out of the tribes of Israel, out of every tribe of man. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon an heap. So that's the revelation that God told Joshua. Get 12 priests, or 12 men to carry the ark, and the minute their feet get in the water, the river will stop. Well, what if he'd said, oh, we don't have to get our feet wet, we'll ruin our sandals, I'm not going to do it. Wouldn't have worked. The word of the Lord was, get your feet wet. So, sure enough, verse 14, when the people removed from their tents to pass over the Jordan, and the priests, it was actually not the 12 members, the priests bearing the ark, the covenant before the public, as they bear the ark, were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all its banks at the time of harvest. The waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon a heap very far from the city of Dom, that is beside Zaratan. And those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off. and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. So they crossed over. Now, read Joshua 21:45. The rest of the book of Joshua is filled with so many times they took more and more of the land as they won more and more battles. In Joshua 21:45, there failed not aught, not anything of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel, all came to pass. Because Joshua walked with God, God was with him, and he knew it, and he obeyed God. Everything God had promised them came to pass. And then Joshua 24 and verse 31. And by the way, chapter 24 is a great summary of all the things God did for the Israelites in the book of Joshua. So if you want to read chapter 4 sometime, it's a great summary. But in verse 31, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. See, Moses walked with God in mighty ways, and then Joshua carried on the tradition and walked with God tremendously. And as long as he was alive, and as long as those elders that had served with him were alive, Israel served the Lord. But then after that, you get into the book of Judges, where God chose different leaders or judges to bring deliverance to God's people. And that's a real roller coaster. And we'll read one record in about Gideon there. We talked about that earlier today too, but we'll go into more detail. But the book of Judges is really a roller coaster. God's people will turn away from the true God and everything will get terrible, and then they'll finally realize what a mess they are, and they'll come back and look to God, and then God will raise up a judge to come bring them deliverance, and they'll have great deliverance for a little while, and they'll turn around and turn away from God again, and it just keeps going on and on like that. Now, we read the first part, Judges 6, about Gideon, but we'll go ahead and read Judges 7 when they actually get the deliverance. Judges 7, verse 2. Here we go. I am going to go rather quickly here because there's so much great stuff to read. Judges 7, verse 2. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. And people are great. I don't know if you've noticed this. People love to take the credit for everything. We have a saying in Washington that is perhaps used other places, but this is where I've heard it, is that success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. Something good happens and everybody wants to claim credit for it. Well, God knew if Gideon went out against the Midianites with a massive, you know, tens of thousands of soldiers like he had there, that they would say they were one because they were such great soldiers. So God said, get rid of a bunch of them so they know I gave you the victory. Verse 3, now therefore go to, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. The return of the people, 22,000. 22,000 thought of an excuse to go home, and only 10,000 were there. Verse 4, and the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet, there's still too many. Bring them down into the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. Now Gideon could have gotten all arguing and say, I want a big army. But he didn't. He was walking with God. He listened to God. Verse 5, so I brought down the people under the water. The Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth at the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down upon his knees to drink. The number of them that lapped, putting their head to the mouth, hand to the mouth, were 300 men, but all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go, every man unto his place. So the people took their victuals in their hands and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man unto his tent, and retained those 300 men. And the host, the army of Midian, was beneath him in the valley. Now look at this. Look how God helped him and how he walked with God. It came to pass the same night, verse 9, that the Lord said unto him, Arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, which Gideon still did, go down with Phurah thy servant to the host, to the army. And thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. And their camels were without number, as the sand by the sea for multitude. So this is a huge army of enemy soldiers. And Gideon has 300 men. How are you going to do that? You may ask yourself. I ask myself a lot that question a lot in my life. I got this big thing to do and I've got only got these certain resources. How am I possibly going to pull it off? But God always has a way. Verse 13, when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, Behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it that the tent lay along. So a loaf of bread rolls down the hill and knocks the tent over. That's pretty amazing. What could that mean? And his fellow answered and said, Oh, that's nothing else save the sword of Gideon the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. And it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned into the host of Israel and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. And he divided the 300 men in three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand, with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, Look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So picture this. There's this big camp in the valley, and all around them, sort of like a horseshoe, are 300 men. And all they have is a torch and a trumpet. But the way warfare was waged in those days, there would usually be a big line of soldiers, perhaps 100 or more men behind each of the 300. So when they saw that, they thought, my goodness, 300 troops of soldiers were surrounded. Ah! But it was sort of like the emperor has no clothes. There were no soldiers behind him. But let's see what the Midianites and Amalekites do. Verse 19, so Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers, which meant that you could see the torches. And the three companies blew the trumpets, brake the pitchers, held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon! And stood every man in his place round about the camp. And all the host, the army, ran and cried and fled. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. And the host fled to Beth Shittah and Zerath and to the border of Abel Meholah unto Tarbath, and the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali, Asher, Manasseh, and pursued after the Midianites. And they ended up winning the battle. Amazing, isn't it? Awesome stuff. So God helped Gideon believe. Gideon walked with God, and when he needed help, God gave it. He did it with remember, there were three other times we talked about this morning when the angel lit his meal on fire that he cooked for the angel with the wet fleece and the dry fleece, and then telling Gideon to go down and listen into the Midianites and hearing them basically admit defeat before the battle even started. Now let's read about Ruth, another wonderful believer. Joshua judges Ruth. which, as you've probably heard me say before, was really not possible, because I don't think you ever met Ruth. But that's the order of the books there. Joshua judges Ruth. And here in Ruth, chapter 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion, the two sons, and Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited his people and given them bread. The famine was over back in the land of Judah. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And this was tough, because the business culture at that time was that the men did all the business. And women like Rahab could survive as businesswomen, but it was pretty rare. They generally needed to have men in the family to carry out the business. So here you have a widow with two daughters-in-law that are widows. So it would be tough for them. Verse 8, Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, "Surely we will return with thee unto thy people." And Naomi said, "Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" Because the Old Testament law said that if a man died without offspring, his brother or some other cousin, near relative, should marry the widow, and then the first child of the widow, the first son, should carry the name of the deceased. But she says, "What do you mean? I don't have, are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have an husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have an husband also tonight and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me." And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, verse 15, "Behold, thy sister-in-law has gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law." And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. My people, thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." And when she saw she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So Ruth decided to stay with her mother-in-law, with her late father's family, and with the God of Israel. So she, like Rahab, knew very little about the true God. Well, she might have learned a lot from her late husband, but she did not grow up as an Israelite. She grew up as a Moabite, but she chose to stay with the true God, as did Rahab. And what you see here is, it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter who you know. It doesn't matter what your bloodline is. It doesn't matter if you have good circumstances or bad circumstances. What matters is, do you want to look to the true God for victory or not? And Ruth wanted to. So they go back, and they settle into a house that Naomi still owns. And Naomi sends Ruth out to go gleaning in the fields, because as you may know, the Old Testament law said when you pick your grain, you can go through the fields once, but you can't go through a second time and pick up what you missed. Whatever is left is for the widows, orphans, and strangers visiting to go get food. So she went by, and the owner of the field, a fellow named Boaz, saw her and says, "Oh, Ruth, I've heard about how kind you've been to Naomi. Here, have some extra food. I'll give you a bunch more extra grain. Come sit at my table with my servants and eat." And he told his servants to help her and not annoy her. So Ruth goes back with this massive amount of grain that Boaz, the landowner, has given her, and Naomi says, "How'd it go?" She says, "It's great. Look what I got. Some guy named Boaz was really nice to me." And Naomi says, "Boaz? He's a close relative. You should go down there to the threshing floor and, you know, ask him to extend his protection to you," which in that culture would be meaning agree to marry you, because she's a close relative of the late husband of Ruth. So she goes there up to the threshing floor late at night when it's dark, asks Boaz to spread his mantle over her, which is a sign of protection. And one of the things Boaz says is verse 12 of chapter 2, "The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee at the God of Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust." In 2:12. He recognized that she was choosing the true God, and he said, "May God bless you for it." So she goes there, and of course Boaz says, "Sure, I'll take you as my wife, but there is one relative closer than me, and he has the right to choose you as his wife first." So he goes down to the elders at the gate, which is sort of like their version of our county courthouse, where you get stuff notarized and approved, and all the elders are there to witness things, and he sees the one relative who's closer by bloodline to Ruth than he is, and he says, "Do you want to buy this piece of land that Naomi, our cousin, is selling?" And the guy said, "Sure, I'd love to have that piece of land." And Boaz says, "But along with it comes Ruth the Moabitess as your wife." The guy says, "No, I don't want to marry a Moabitess. I won't do it." So Boaz goes and marries her, and then look what it says, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth. Chapter 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne." Because Naomi had lost her husband and both her sons. She'd sent one of her daughters-in-law home, but Ruth had stuck with her. So now Naomi still has a daughter-in-law, the daughter-in-law has a husband, and the daughter-in-law has just born a son. And Naomi took the child, verse 16, and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, "There is a son born unto Naomi," and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. So Ruth ended up being the mother of Obed, the grandmother of Jesse, and the great-grandmother of King David. And Boaz, her husband, was the daughter of Rahab. And part of the reason Boaz might not have been scared to marry a Moabitess was his mother was not of the bloodline of Israel either. So he grew up not being scared of foreigners, so to speak. And so yes, God wanted Israelites to marry other Israelites. There were times it just wasn't practical. And you'll find things in your life too, where what the scriptures say strictly, especially in the Old Testament law, just aren't practical. Then you ask God, is it okay to do it? And remember what it says in the epistles, that where the spirit of the law, Lord is, there is liberty. There are a lot of cases in the scriptures where God gives people permission to do stuff that frankly is contrary to the scriptures. Remember when Naaman after we didn't read this, we read a little bit about Naaman, but after he had been healed, he asked Elisha if it was okay that for him to walk into the basically pagan temple with his boss and bow down to the pagan god. And Elisha just said, go in peace. So a lot of things that you'd think are against the scriptures, God is very flexible on if people have the heart to love God. So both Ruth and Naomi shouldn't have been allowed to marry Israelites, but they did. No, excuse me, Ruth and Rahab, but they did marry Israelites. And they were wonderful believers, and their sons ended up in the Christ line. Awesome, awesome stuff. So, and we read about that. Now, these are generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Minadam, begat Nashon. Salmon begat Boaz of Ruth. And Boaz begat Obed. Boaz was, his mother was Rahab. And Boaz begat Obed with Ruth being her mother. Awesome stuff. Now, talk about walking with God. This is amazing. When the Israelites want a king. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Great, great records here. 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 1. And it came to pass, 1 Samuel 8, 1, because Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre, dishonest money, took bribes, and perverted judgment. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came unto Samuel unto Ramah, and said to them, behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel, and they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. So he didn't like it, because they never had a king. The neighboring nations who they obliterated every time they went to war with them had kings. And they thought that was the answer, was to have a king like the other nations. The Lord said unto Samuel, verse 7, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto thee. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, albeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign unto them. And then he tells them all the way they're going to be taxed and put into service and treated like slaves, and they didn't care. After that, verse 19, nevertheless the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we'll have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, the ones that Israel destroyed, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice, make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, go ye every man to his own city. And then, of course, God chose Saul, and Samuel went down and anointed him king of Israel. Then, in chapters 15 and 16, because Saul had walked away from God, God sent Samuel to anoint David as the new king. And you're familiar with the record. He goes to Jesse, because God says, and to go anoint the son of Jesse, king of Israel. And now Samuel was a little nervous about it, because he knew that if Saul heard he was anointing somebody else king, he'd get killed. So they said, I'm going down there to perform a sacrifice, which he did. But Jesse brings out his oldest son, and God says, not him. So Samuel says, bring the next son, not him. Finally, they run out of sons, and Samuel says, don't you have anybody else? Oh, yeah, the youngest, but he's out watching the sheep. So Samuel said, bring him in. And that's the one God chose. And it says, the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And God saw something in David's heart that he would be a great king and he would walk with God. And he did. Saul walked with God for a short time, but then quickly turned away from him, whereas David continued to walk with God. Even on his deathbed, he was getting revelation for his son Solomon to be the king. David had other sons who treated him very badly. So God told him that Solomon would end up being king, and he was. So let's go on to read more about David in 1 Samuel 17. So there was a time when, although Saul was still acting as king, God had David anointed. So there was a transition period where Saul went downhill and eventually died from not listening to God and disobeying God. And then David finally came in and became king. But first, let's read about him with 1 Samuel 17. Now, the way David walks with God here and trusts God is pretty darn amazing. We've all read this record, but let's read it from the point of view of walking with God. 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in Ephestamim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath. Named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. A cubit was about 1.5 feet, so he was a little over 9 feet tall. He had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, very heavy mail. He had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah. He's already been anointed king, even though after being anointed king, he was sent back to take care of the sheep. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite, verse 12, of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And the man went among old men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So this is amazing. David has been anointed king because God's already rejected Saul. Yet, he's out watching the sheep. Well, we'll see if that changes. And the Philistines drew near, verse 16, morning and evening, and presented him, presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David, his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn, and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning. He left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded. As he came to the trench, as the host was going forth to the fight, he shouted for the battle, Yay, Israel! Woo! For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage, all his stuff, in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, Behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. Verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, now look at this. What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? Now look at this. Everybody's talking about how big and tough looking he is, because he's 9 feet tall with a Chevrolet wrapped around him. He's a very big guy, very heavily armed. Look what he says in the middle of verse 26. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Now that's important, because circumcision was a sign of the covenant between Israel and God. So without being circumcised, he doesn't have that connection of God's protection. Who is this uncircumcised that he should defy the armies of who? Saul? No, the armies of the living God. He recognized that Goliath may have been big and tough looking, but he didn't have a covenant with God, and he was defying God's armies. He's the first person to say that. Because David is walking with God. He has been anointed king of Israel. Verse 27, the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. Now look, and Eliab, his oldest brother, when he spake unto the men, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why comest thou down hither? With whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou hast come down thou mightest to see the battle. David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? So even then he's been anointed king of Israel, even though he's the only one to recognize that Goliath is fighting a losing battle by fighting against the true God, he still has to deal with crap from his older brother. See, there are certain things in life you never get away from. There's just annoying things in life that are going to be there. At any rate, verse 30, and he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former matter. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go out and fight with this Philistine. So all these big, tough, professional, heavily armed soldiers are scared to death of the Philistine, and here comes this shepherd boy. Again, we don't know how old he is. Maybe he's 16, maybe he's 18. We don't know. Maybe he's 20, but he's a young man, and all he really has is a sling, which they used to throw stones to startle the sheep so they'd run back. That's all he's got. And Saul said to David, verse 33, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. Thou art but a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. Now look what David said. Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion. He knew God gave him deliverance. He walked with God. He trusted God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, the Lord be with you. Can't lose. If you want to go get chopped up by the Philistine, you go right ahead. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. David girded his sword upon his armor, and he tried to go, for he hadn't proved it. And David said unto Saul, I can't go with these. I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And there's another great lesson to be learned there. God will accept you the way you are and work with you the way you are. You have things you're good at. God will work with that. You have other stuff like Saul's armor you don't know anything about. God won't expect you to do that. He'll work with your skills, your abilities, your heart, your comfort level, so to speak. He'll do all of that. And that's what David did. He didn't wear Saul's armor. David put them off him. Verse 40, and he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in his shepherd's bag, which he had, even a scrip and a sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, now this is one of my favorite verses in this whole record. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. And that's where you can see how David walked with God and trusted God. What a heart he had. He said, you're big, you're tough, but I'm coming in the name of the God of Israel. Let's look at that verse again, verse 45. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword, with a spear, with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. He was diving right in. David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead. The stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. And then you know the rest. He went and chopped off the head of Goliath with his own sword. And then the next chapter, Jonathan and David become good friends. Everybody in Israel likes David a lot more than Saul, but then David has to hide from Saul so Saul doesn't kill him. And God, of course, brings him deliverance. So we're going to stop here, and let's see. The time is 7:57. Let's start back at 8:15. Have a good break. God bless you guys.